I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, May 1st, 2020, and this is episode 66 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is a song that just really lifted my mood this week. It dropped this week. It is the remix of Savage by Megan Thee Stallion featuring Beyonce. And I was like, yes, this cranks. So I'm not a huge, like, don't tell the beehive, but like not the biggest Beyonce fan in the world. I recognize all of the majesty, but I can't say that I've ever actually purchased a Beyonce album, but I do buy singles sometimes. And honestly, I don't buy very many albums these days anyway. Like, you have to be one of my favorite artists for me to buy a whole album. But yeah, singles I'll buy because I use Spotify, but I am too cheap to pay the extra $5 to get Spotify on my phone. So I just have it on the desktop. So if I want to be able to listen to certain things anytime I want to, then I'll just buy the single. So anyway, if you need a dance break at any point during your day, check it out. Speaking of which, I saw an article about a thing called trigger workouts or micro workouts. And basically, it's just trying to incorporate more movement throughout your day. So for those of us who sit all day, it's a good idea. And I was thinking about this more because my physical therapist is sending these weekly newsletters now. And I know you're supposed to get up every hour or so, which I don't often do. But they said that you should get up every 20 to 30 minutes. And I was like, ooh, I really don't do that. It's difficult, especially because when you're in like a period of deep work, which when I'm coding or when I'm writing, it's often deep work when I'm trying to get like a 2-hour chunk of time of focus. But I definitely do need to be incorporating more movement. So basically, a trigger workout is just, you set a timer every hour, hour and a half, you get up and do something, like a few reps of something. Like, I'll do 10 push-ups or 10 squats or go to my pull-up bar, which is in the next doorway, and do my max pull-ups, which is now only 2. It had been 4 before I injured my wrists. But I'll do negatives or, you know, the things that help you train for pull-ups. So I'm trying to do that about every couple of hours. And the idea is, if you do this every hour during the day, then you're incorporating, you know, a bunch of reps of something. And it's not like a whole workout, but it is better than being seated all day long. And I do have a sit-stance desk, so I do, I don't have any real methodology to my sitting and standing. It's sort of like when my butt gets numb, I stand up. And then when my legs get tired, I sit down. So anyway, healthy writing, healthy sitting, just had a birthday and I'm not getting any younger. And these little aches and pains are starting to show themselves in ways that they haven't before. So that's fun. I had heard someone on a podcast months and months ago say these were women in their 40s or maybe early 50s, but in my general age range, and just saying, you know, we're building the bodies we're going to have for the rest of our lives now. And that stuck with me, you know, it's like, I am still kind of lazy, but I'm trying to push myself to do more workouts. Like I had mentioned a couple weeks ago, I'm still doing 10 to 20 minutes of yoga every day, followed by another 10 to 20 minutes of just regular stretching and mobility stuff. And that is helping. That's helping with my energy level. If I work out in the morning, just something short, I can't lift weights in the morning. That's the thing. I need food in order to lift weights. So that's best done in the afternoon or evening, because I just have terrible workouts when I'm trying to do like fasted training or just work out first thing in the morning with like heavy weights. But I can do body weight stuff, stretching, core, yoga, all that stuff. And I'm only doing 20 minutes max of yoga because my wrists are a lot better. For those who've been following along, they're still not 100%, and I don't know if they ever will go back to what they were before. But I mean, I can do planking and downward dog and things that put a lot of pressure on my wrists just after 20 minutes. If it's a lot of it, then they start to get really sore and I start to get worried. So I'm limiting myself because of that. But yes, doing pretty well. So writing update. I have not been doing any writing. I'm still working my way through the John Truby book, The Anatomy of Story. For some reason this week, there was more work, like work going on, day job work. And I just made a lot of excuses. You know, I don't have a good reason for why I wasn't writing. I think subconsciously I'm just still tired. And there's nothing wrong with having the break. It does make me feel twitchy. Like I want to be writing something. I want to be plotting. I want to be doing it. But as much as I want to be, there's a reason I'm not, because I'm procrastinating and because I'm just avoiding it. Because it's work and it's hard and I'm tired. But I was invited to a write-in later this afternoon, an online Zoom write-in. And I'm excited about that because I'm the type of person who needs that sort of external motivation at times like this to jumpstart me again. Once I have momentum, I'm very self-motivated and I can get through things. But when it's tough, when I'm hitting walls, when I'm just not at my emotional best, then that sort of external force is helpful. So I'm glad to have that. And it's like, there's all kinds of write-ins that are going on that I could have been joining all of this time, but it took like a specific, hey, Leslie, do you want to come to this thing? Like a specific invitation. And from, you know, a person, I was like, oh yes. And I don't want to let that person down in my head, even though I'm sure he wouldn't care either way, but like he invited me, so he wanted me to come. That sort of one-on-one personal connection of that idea of not wanting to let someone down. That's me. That's kind of one of the things that drives me. And that's why accountability is such a big motivator for me. So I came across this website. It's called The Red Hand Files. And I had looked up who does it. It's a person who's a musician in a band I'd never heard of. But he has this website and people ask him questions. And some of it is about this music and some of it is about other things. And whoever this guy is, and I don't actually know his name because it's not listed on the site right now, but I'll link to it and you can figure it out maybe, is really insightful and has really good answers to these questions. So he received a question and it says, do you need to be hurt or mentally ill to be a great artist? I think I really encourage you to read the answer because I got a lot out of it. I will just read a little bit about it because he says that, and he's talking about songwriters because that's what he is apparently, but I think it applies to all kinds of writers and artists of all types, but that many of the great artists appear to possess a wildly conflicted sense of themselves, yet persistently pursue their own uniqueness, even when it runs at odds with the orthodoxies of the day. They tend to be outliers, abyss gazers, and misfits whose sense of isolation is further amplified by their notoriety. It says they understand on some level that it is the nature of their vocation to steal across the borders of convention, collect up ideas, and bring them back to the world. And then he goes on, whether being hurt is a necessary requirement to creativity is only true in so much as to live is partly to suffer. You cannot create without suffering because you cannot live without suffering. I know that for me, I definitely believed that at a certain point in my life. I definitely believed that I had to. It wasn't art unless it had caused me great pain or was a reflection of the great pain in my life. I do think that to connect powerfully with other people, you have to be vulnerable. And vulnerability is a kind of pain, you know. I think it doesn't have to be suffering, but to be vulnerable is to open yourself up to hurt and to be willing to share a part of yourself is to invite the critique and the criticism and the potential for pain. He also says that we should gravitate towards happiness when possible. And that's also really powerful. This whole thing, it's short. It's a short read. But there were a lot of things on this site that I thought were very, very cool. He has another one about prayer and how it's not exclusive to religious practice. You need not pray to anyone. You just, it's valuable to pray into your disbelief because it's really an encounter with yourself. So yeah, just a website full of great quotables and great ideas. And like, he doesn't have his name on the site. His name is Nick and he's in a band and that's all I know, but it's, the site is theredhandfiles.com and I will put some links in. Speaking of art and pain, I didn't get a chance to talk about Fiona Apple last week and her new album, Fetch the Bolt Cutters. So it dropped the day before my birthday, and I had actually forgotten. I put a reminder somewhere, but it was my brother who was like, hey, what do you think about the new Fiona? I was like, oh, thank you for reminding me, because it slipped my mind. So I immediately went out and bought it. I listened to the first song, and my husband walked into the room, and he was like, what is this? I was like, it's the new Fiona. He was like, are you enjoying this? And I'm like, I'm not sure. So I listened to it again. I listened to it several times because, yeah, at first listen, I was not enjoying it. It did grow on me. It is still my least favorite Fiona Apple album, which is really interesting because it like hit the zeitgeist, or at least a portion of the zeitgeist, in a way, and people are just raving about it. Pitchfork gave it a perfect score, which is very rare, and just all kinds of music outlets. And I was consuming all this media. I was like, why is this album not hitting me the way it's hitting everyone else? I'm a Fiona Apple stan. I love everything she does. And I do not hate this album at all. I don't think I even dislike it at this point. It did have to grow on me, but it is still my least favorite. And I don't know exactly why, when everyone else seems to love it. Sometimes I'm just contrary, you know? Like, there's things about each song that I love, and there's moments within each song, but as a whole, it didn't hit me the way that it hit other people, for whatever reason that is. But I think that I interrupted my own writing update to talk about that. I'm feeling scattered. So, yes, I haven't been writing. I'm going to write today. I'm still feeling a lot of energy about the story, the Portal Fantasy, even though I haven't been technically working on it. So I opened up the Scrivener file, and there's 56,000 words that I've written. And I think part of the reason why I haven't been working on it is because I'm not sure if I should read what I have or not, or just start over from scratch, just like toss it all and start over. And part of that doesn't make any sense. But part of it is like, I'm going to have to rewrite the whole thing anyway. Do I want the old words in my head or not? And I have not come to an answer about that yet. And I have not read any of those 56,000 words yet. I also dug out the notebooks to find I'm already in my second notebook of the story. So whenever I start a new project, I start a new notebook. And I generally create a folder because I have a lot of worksheets and things that I use in addition to the notebooks. So I discovered that I'm on notebook 2 of this story, and I'm like about a fifth of the way through notebook 2. So I've done a lot of work on this, which is why I'm struggling with whether to just start over from the beginning, because the beginning needs to be completely reworked, and I've reworked it at least 3 or 4 times. The body of the story hasn't changed that much. I guess I do need to read it at least. I don't know why I'm scared to do that. For some reason, there's a resistance there, and it could just be resistance, capital R, that Stephen Pressfield talks about, which is the thing that keeps you from doing your work, because it absolutely has kept me from doing my work, and I've done no work. So I guess I should just bite the bullet and read it and make some notes. I had, changing topics. My brother had asked me if I would beta read one of his friend's manuscripts, because it's a good friend of his, and he has found that his relationship with this friend deteriorates when they give each other feedback on their work. And so I guess, I don't know if he volunteered me or if he asked me first. I hope he asked me first, but this is a friend who has actually helped support, you know, my book. He's an actor, and he has posted about, you know, my book. So I was like, all right, yeah, I know he's good friends with Paul. So I crossed my fingers and hoped that he wasn't a terrible writer. And I agreed to beta read the first few chapters. And his book is lovely. I was pleasantly surprised about how good it was and how much I liked it. I do enjoy beta reading for people, but it's always this little part of me. It's like, if I have to beta read and it's just like god awful sludge, then it gets awkward and it's not as much fun. Beta reading for people who are good writers who just need another set of eyes and another perspective is just lovely for me. And luckily that was this experience. And so I typed up a really long email with my feedback, and I was gushing at the beginning of it, but I did have some things he could take another look at. And when he replied, he wasn't sure whether he should start revising right away because my feedback had, you know, brought some stuff up for him, or should he keep going to the end? And I always tell people, keep going to the end. Like, do not stop and revise in the middle until you know your process. I mean, that is some people's process, and apparently it works for some people. But if you have any questions about it at all, get to the end first, especially with your first book. If you've been working on it for a long time, and he has been, then you don't even know if the beginning's going to be the same until you get to the end. So that was my response. But yeah, I was glad to be able to do that. There's another 20K in 5 days starting. So hashtag 20K in 5 days. It is a thing, an event, I don't know, started by author Tasha L. Harrison. And if you're interested, I will link to it. She's got a Facebook group going. It starts May 15th. And I'm hoping that in the next 14 days that I will be able to plot and outline and do everything I need to do to get a good start on May 15th with a 20K in 5 days on this manuscript. That is my hope and my plan. So being that I only have 2 weeks, that is another good push for me to get off my butt and just do the work I need to do. Because I think that's, you know, another external thing that I can be a part of, and that is a challenge, and that I want to beat the challenge. I've done it before, and this is just perfect timing. So sometimes these things come in your lap, and they feel like they came at the right time, and that this is one of those things, and I'm really grateful for that. I also got a question from someone who is a self-published fantasy author, and she's just finished her 4-book series, and she asked me about my experiences with traditional publishing, specifically because I don't think she's getting the type of numbers on her books that she wants to. I got the impression from her question that she hadn't had them professionally edited because it's too expensive. And she was looking at traditional publishing, like going that route as a way to get like her books edited. And I just needed to dispel that idea. The way that I got published in terms of being self-published and then having a traditional publisher pick up the same books and publish them is extremely rare. It happens. I know several other authors it's happened to, but it is still statistically extremely rare. And it's not like you can just go that way. Like, I've got these books, will you republish them? That's not a thing that really happens. So in no way should it be considered like free editing. So take that off the table. Now, if you're looking to go that route, definitely go with something new. And so you'd have to write something new, query an agent, and then go through the querying process. Then the agent will start to shop your book around to editors. And that's the normal process. So unless, you know, something unusual happens, like it happened with me, then there's nothing wrong with deciding to pursue traditional publishing, but there's a lot of steps, and it may or may not be something that you're happy with. Now, self-publishing is expensive. It can be very daunting to put out a professional product that is, you know, when you pay for editors, multiple editors, developmental, copy, edits, proofreads, covers, you know, and then marketing and all of that stuff. It's a lot of money, but I don't know if that should be the primary motivation for pursuing traditional publishing. There's a lot of reasons to do that. You know, there's a lot of authors who don't want to market, who don't want to, even though, you know, you still have to with TradPub. But so just wanted to kind of nip that in the bud because it's definitely a misunderstanding of how it works. And I always want to make sure that people know when they ask me about my journey that they know that it's strange. Publishing news. I published the first story in the Cupid Guild. It's called The Cupid Mix-Up this past Thursday. And May 7th, the second story, The Cupid Getaway, comes out. They're coming out once a week in Kindle Unlimited. I did this morning get, this is waiting on my doorstep, the proof copy of the print version of the whole collection. So The Cupid Guild is the whole collection. I laid it out in vellum, as I talked about. It came out really nicely. I'm super happy with the way the cover looks. I haven't gotten glossy books before. When I did the self-published version of Earthsinger Chronicles, they were all matte. But I thought this cover would look nice glossy. So But yeah, it turned out nice. I haven't even looked through it really since it literally was just on my doorstep this morning. I don't know if they're delivering early or if Kate was here last night. I just didn't see it. I'm in the process of doing print versions for the Angel books, just laying them out in vellum. I'm trying to do some full bleed stuff with that. Honestly, I had actually paid to get them laid out, the print versions laid out like 2 or 3 years ago. And I just never put the books for sale. I mean, I have a print copy of Angelborn, and I did sell it at a couple of events. And she did a great job, the artist that I used to lay out the print version. But I just would prefer to have the control over it. And I don't know InDesign, so I could buy the InDesign files from her and keep them up. But I think it would just be easier for me to just have the control, do them in vellum. They're not quite as pretty as the version that she did, but I will be able to exert my need for control over them. So those will be out, I don't know, whenever I get them out. But it is nice to hold the books in your hand again. And I probably will read through it all because I am that person, even though I just copied the file. So if there's a mistake in everything. It looks good. I'm so happy with it. And also, we're starting to do some cross promotions for the Frolic Podcast Network. And first up is a show that I actually listen to every episode. I haven't listened to every episode, but for the past few months since I've started listening, I love it. It's Learning the Tropes, and I will let you hear directly from them about why you should listen to it too.
Hey, everybody. We are Learning the Tropes. I'm Erin.
I'm Clayton.
And I'm the romance novel veteran.
And I'm the virgin.
And every week, we read a different romance novel, and then we talk about what we loved about it. We talk about all of our favorite tropes. We talk about Only One Bed, Secret Places.
Secret Places. That's mine. You stole it. Every trope under the sun. Mm-hmm. So to give you a little taste of our show, we're going to play a clip from the episode where we reviewed Lisa Claypass's Dreaming of You. So I started reading this book, and I immediately loved it. I love this book.
Oh, I'm so happy. This is one of my absolute favorite books in the world. Yeah. I love Lisa Claypass so much. And if you were not into this book, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. This is going to be so upsetting to me. I am so happy that you loved it and that we could just fangirl out for the next hour because that's all I want to do. I didn't want to have to defend it. Learning the Tropes comes out every Wednesday and you can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
So come check us out.
So that's it for me for this week. Definitely check out Learning the Tropes, and thank you for checking out my podcast and being a listener. I really appreciate it. And I will talk to you next week. Happy reading. For episode show notes and to get the footnotes newsletter with the show notes in them, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. I would love a rating or a review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more wonderful podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.